Okay, we are now starting the third hour. We're a little late from the standpoint of getting everything started at the half hour at 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, but we're getting a little bit more time than 45 minutes each session, so that's throwing us off. That's a me thing, not a you thing. But for those who are listening, streaming, or will listen to this later, the session that we just did, which is session number 5, that's already up, the audio on the site. And this other stuff will be up later. All right, we're about to get into some really interesting material we already have. And we're going to do some reading, and I want to be careful about how much we read. This is about Mattathias. He is the one whose grandfather was Asmoneus, that became Hasmoneus, that the empire is going to be named for. And he's the father of Judas Maccabeus, or Judas the Hammer. So Hasmonean, Maccabean, two different names on either side of Mattathias that define this generation of people. So if you look at this, this is a quote. This entire section here, and I'm not going to read all of it, but this is from all of the first chapter of 1 Maccabees. So when you get down to the end of it, you're going to see this is 70 verses long, and I'm not going to read it all. But what I want you to notice when you get a chance to, and all this material will be posted at the end of the class, so all the notes that I'm using, that I'm teaching from, that I'm riffing off of, and whatever, I've digested other material, put some of my own material together. This is literally taken from the RSV version, which is what the HarperCollins Study Bible is. It's the RSV version, but the Apocryphal is the RSV version. There are King James versions of the Apocryphal that you can get as well, but this one was easily accessible when I was looking for it. This chronicles the history that we're going to look at in just a moment. And when I say it chronicles the history, remember we're saying that these books are not inspired, but they are nonetheless historical. So this is the second chapter, the book of 1 Maccabees, that details what happened during this period of time. So I'm not going to read through all this, but if we're glancing through it, you're going to talk about what happened. Notice, he said, I saw the blasphemies that were committed in Judah and Jerusalem. That's Mr. Antiochus and the desecration of the temple, and forcing people to be involved in worshiping pagan gods, all right? So he's going to complain about that. So notice what he says, behold our holy place, the temple. It's been laid waste. The Gentiles, that's anybody who's not a Jew, all right? They're Syrians, they're the Seleucid Empire. They've profaned it, so they're non-Jews, so they're called Gentiles. Why should we live any longer? We might as well die. They're not letting us worship like we used to. So Mattathias, that's the leader here, and his sons, he had 5 sons, several of whom we're going to mention specifically. They tore the clothes, that was a sign of mourning, sackcloth and ashes kind of thing. And they tore their clothes, and they put on sackcloth, and they're mourning. Why? Because you are not allowing us to worship the way we were supposed to. Now watch. They came to where Mr. Mattathias lived. He lived in a place called Modi'in, and it's spelled in different ways in different translations. And they came there, and they were going to force those people where they lived to offer sacrifices according to the Greek system. All right. Many from Israel came to them. Mattathias and his sons were there. The king's offer said this. Watch. King's officer said to Mattathias, said, listen, you're a leader here. You've got respect from the community, you and your sons. You come and you be the first one to offer sacrifice according to the Grecian system. And Mattathias wasn't going to do it. He is not going to do it. You do that and you'll be friends of the king. Now notice, if you worship like we want you to worship, we'll be okay with you. You violated your conscience, you violated God's will, but we won't kill you. So if you don't want to die, the temptation is to go along with this. This is what's going on in the Roman Empire during the period of the time of the end of the first century, not too far off from this, when the Roman Empire, some of them did the same thing. Watch what Mr. Mattathias says. This is what's recorded. If all the nations that live under the rule of the king obey him, he says, if everybody else in the world does this, and they've chosen to do that, we're not going to. We're not going to do it. You can kill us. We're not going to do it. So he refuses to do it. So when he finished saying that, watch this. Somebody else came forward and said, I'll do it. So here's another Jew who just heard the religious, the officers who came from the Seleucids challenging Mattathias because he's a leader in this community. You and your sons do this, and he'll set the example for everybody else. He said, I don't care if the whole world does it. I'm not going to. So another Jew is going to do it. And Mattathias kills him. You might say, well, that's kind of intense. Yeah. In righteous anger, he ran and killed the Jew upon this altar. It's a pagan altar. And then he killed the king's officer who brought the command. So watch what he just did. He killed the Jew because this Jew was going to violate God's law. And he killed an emissary, an officer of the Seleucid rulers. So you're going to have to go into hiding now. Moses killed an Egyptian. And it was discovered that people knew about it. He went into hiding for 40 years. So Mattathias cried out in a loud voice and said, let everybody who's zealous for the law and supports the covenant, that's God's covenant, this is what we want you to do. So what we're going to see is people who were seeking righteousness and justice, they went into hiding. And the Seleucid people came looking for them. And when they found them, they were going to kill them. So Mattathias, when he and his friends found out about it, they mourned. Why? We've got people who aren't willing to capitulate to the false system of worship, and they're dying for it. What are we going to do? Now, there's a complicating factor here. Some of the people said, we'll defend ourselves, but on the Sabbath day, we got to respect the Sabbath day, and we won't fight. And when the enemies found out they wouldn't fight on the Sabbath day, what did they do? They attacked them on the Sabbath day, and they wouldn't fight, and they died. So Mattathias and his son said, we're not going to let people kill us. And so it's a matter of conscience, weird matter of conscience. Conscience says obey God, but conscience says we obey God, they'll kill us all. So we want to fight for our rights. So they chose not to refrain from fighting against the enemy on the Sabbath day. So that's what they did. Now, let me mention something that's interesting here. They joined with a group of people known as Hasidians. I don't know if you're familiar with the term Hasidic Jews. Mm-hmm. It's a particular branch of that's. These are the forebears of that. It means pious ones. So then, this is the beginning. The next chapter in the book, if you when you pick up a copy, deals with the Hasidines, the Pharisees, and the Sadducees. Later, the Essenes and the Zealots. All five of those religious groups started during this period of time. And all five of them started in response to the imposition of outside rule coming and telling the Jews, you can't worship that way. This is the way you have to worship. So all of these different groups are in response in large measure to the persecution that came upon God's people. So the intent was for the Pharisees, who were the separatists, and the Essenes, who were very much separatists, lived off in isolation, to do that in order to be righteous in God's sight. So when you come into the New Testament, you've got all these different religious communities saying, listen, we had to fight against these people who threatened us with our lives if we didn't do what they wanted to, so you need to listen to us today. So what developed out of a rather innocent, very positive notion is going to develop into its own kind of religious system that takes on weight equal to God's law. That's what Jesus accused the Pharisees of doing. All right, so some of these people said, we're standing right with you. If that's what's going to happen, we're going to do that. So I'm not going to read all this, but it will be in the text. You can look it up later. You're going to see, challenged by the royal Seleucid officials to engage in pagan sacrifices, Mattathias said, nope, not going to happen. You kill everybody. I don't care what's going to happen. We're not going to do it. So they killed the Jew who was about to, and they killed the official who came to command it. All right. So they refused to comply. They rebelled. Why did they rebel? They're motivated by their zeal for the law and what God started. You can kill me, but you can't make me offer a sacrifice like this. So what they started grew into a plea, a campaign, and a war. So here's the beginning of a war, the Maccabean War. Why is it a war? Because they're not going to let people tell them what they could and could not do religiously. Mattathias and his sons weren't the only ones. But they're going to be the dominant family for the next 133 years, a century and a third. All right, they're willing to give up their lands and their lives to fight against this false system. All right, that's pretty interesting. Now, notice, they are going to go in and they're going to rebel. They're going to go armed, going to battle. Some Jews were going to resist, but they're not going to go to battle. Some of them lost their lives. Some of them were going to go to battle, but they were going to honor the Sabbath day. Some of them lost their lives, all right? Some of the Jews capitulated, and they said, you can kill me. I want to live. I'll worship whatever you want. I still believe in God, but this is what I want to do, all right? So others, though rejecting what the Seleucids imposed, refused to take action. Others, in deference to the Sabbath, did fight on that day, and some of them fled into the desert, and they were killed. The oppressing soldiers waited for the Sabbath day. They're not going to fight us. We're going to kill them then, all right? That guy's always got his guns. When he sets his guns down, I'm going to shoot him. All right? That's, in effect, what they did. So that's what they did. They decided to fight on the Sabbath. So these people, the Hasidines, the pious ones, also opposed to Hellenization, that is a Greek influence of worship and so forth. They joined with Mattathias and they said, we'll fight with you. All right? So now the battle begins. Now notice, and this is an overstatement simplifying what happened in the Revolutionary War. With the Revolutionary Minutemen and whatever, they took pot shots at the British soldiers and did stand out there waiting for them to get shot. So that's what these guys are going to do. They're going to do guerrilla warfare. They're going to attack and they're going to run. They're going to attack and they're going to run. And so it's not like a huge army in which both sides line up and they're just going to shoot at each other. All right, they didn't have guns then, obviously. But that's not what they're going to do. So they attack in quick strike fashion and they run off. And so that's going to cause some problems. And notice, this is one of the things that's going on. Mattathias fought only in Judea, didn't go everywhere else. And he killed anybody, even Jews, who collaborated with the Greeks and the Seleucids. So he's killing some of his own countrymen. Why? If they're sympathetic to the Greeks, they might turn me in. All right? You might think, well, that's pretty harsh. Now, let me just say, there's a sense in which these guys saved Israel. I want to say that again. There's a sense in which they saved Israel. There's no directive from God to tell them to do this. They're doing this on their own. Remember, there's no prophets. There's no king. And the priest, that's a mess. We already saw people buying and selling the right to be a priest already. All right, that's a mess. And by the way, some of the priests were complicit with these guys who said, you got to worship Greek culture and stuff. You got to do this way. So that left Jerusalem as pretty much the only place that these Greeks are going to have control, because these guys are taking on everybody else in the country. Now, we come to the next guy. Judas Maccabee, and his name is spelled several different ways, and that one's not the right one there. It's sometimes spelled with an A-U, Maccabeus, and sometimes just with a U. So sometimes it's spelled with an A, and sometimes it's spelled without an A. When I put an A, it tells me I misspelled it, but I've seen it both ways. So he's the one who's called Judas the Hammer. Why? Because the guy's going to be intent on going after other people. All right. So he is one of the five sons of Mattathias. All right. Before his father died, Mattathias blesses his son. And I said before, very briefly, 1 Maccabees kind of models like it was written by a biblical writer. So it has Mattathias gathering all his sons together and blessing them, kind of like Jacob did to his sons at the end of the book of Genesis. So it follows a biblical model. It's not inspired, but it kind of follows that. All right? So in those blessings, Mattathias is encouraging his sons to continue what they were doing, fight against these people, don't let them make you do anything. And so his brothers accepted Judas to be the new leader. And this is spelled out, all these references here in the book of Maccabees. Judas wasn't worrisome to the Seleucid government at first, because he's just a bunch of rebels. They come out and kill a bunch of people and run off in the woods. All right? They're not going to come out and take on a huge army like us. That's right, they weren't. But they're still going to win a lot of points in the meantime. The book of 2 Maccabees chapter 8 tells us that Judas and his army successfully defeated a Greek contingent. Now they took on a real army and they beat them. That caused some attention. In addition to that, they robbed them. They took their weapons, they took their goods, they took their monies, and that gives him a little bit more strength. So following the next year, he's going to go against another Greek king, at some other Greeks. Led by Lysias, they were defeated, forced to retreat, that is these people. And then Judas came to the city of Jerusalem. What's he going to do? 3 years after the guy desecrated it by offering swine on the temple, instituted prostitution worship there, put altars over the top of God's altar, whatever. 3 years later, they're going to set back the system the way it was. And this is known as the Feast of Dedication, or Hanukkah. All right? Hanukkah, which is celebrated today, means dedication. They rededicated the temple. Backtrack a little bit. Here's what happened at Sinai. First installation of the tabernacle and the priesthood and that whole system. In the period at the beginning of the restoration, they redo everything, starting over from scratch. Now they got to redo it again. Now the temple wasn't destroyed. It was defiled. It wasn't destroyed. They turned it into a pagan place of worship, but it still stood. But now they have to dedicate it again, because these Greek people turned it into something that God never intended. So they have a celebration known as the Feast of Hanukkah Dedication, or the Festival of Lights. And the reason why was when they came in to light the candles, or light the oil lamps and so forth, they only found enough oil to last for one day, and so it burned for 8 days. And so historically, they say it was a miracle. It's not biblically supported, obviously. That's why the Feast of Dedication or Hanukkah lasts for 8 days, and there are lots of celebrations about that. It was a legitimate rededication, but it wasn't an authorized feast from the standpoint of what God said. Incidentally, the Feast of Purim, in which the Jews were spared in the book of Esther, is mentioned in the New Testament as being kept by the Jews at that time. So that's what's going on. So what's interesting is Mr. Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who caused all this trouble, dies. So the guy who caused all this trouble, forcing the Greek religion on these people, he's going to die. And about the same time, within a month or two, the rededication. All right? So one of the factions that followed him as successor ended the decree. Excuse me, that should be decree. Got it. To worship the gods, got rid of and killed Menelaus. That's the guy who wasn't in the seed line, bought the rights to be the priest. Killed him and installed another guy to be priest. But he's a Hellenist, which means he's a compromiser, all right? So they rededicate the temple, but they still got a guy who's a priest who was installed by somebody not in part of the system. So you still got the whole, you still got all the funny stuff going on, as my grandfather would say, shenanigans, all right? You got all the shenanigans going on with stuff that God didn't want. Where'd it come from? Outside influence. And some of the Jewish people, the religious leaders, were complicit with that. Noted in our earliest discussions, the role of the priesthood changed dramatically in this period between the Testaments. Why? This kind of stuff. No prophets to call them on it. No priests to keep them in line. You know, I mentioned before, we've got a checks and balance system when everything works. You've got judicial, legislative, and executive branches. Then you had the priests, all right, the princes or the kings, and you had the prophets. Don't have that now. And so, and the priests were coming under the undue influence of other nations. So, you know, we talk about political influence, what's going on in this country from other countries around the world. This was happening big time all the time in those days. All the time, people were sticking their nose into the business of another country. Just all the time. So much so that they would say what you could and could not do in your religious system. And so the priests were subject to that. You might say, well, this is a very, very sad picture. It is. That's what Jesus was facing. Only 150 years before, this was what was going on in their history. So this was still fresh in people's history. We think about a history. The United States of America is a rather young nation, a couple hundred years old. This is less than that. All right? So people who knew anything about history, they knew what happened, you know, before John and Jesus came on the scene. All right, what's going to happen next? Now, here's what's interesting. Judas, that's Maccabeus, so this Judas is not Judas that's going to betray Jesus. He's responsible for the final blows that ended the oppression of the Seleucids, and I say Seleucids slash Greeks. They weren't Greeks, but they were in league with Greek culture, so they're going to at the same time. That's why I put them together. And the practice of Greek and pagan religion, he wasn't satisfied. So notice, he stopped what they were doing, but now he's going to expand his own empire. Watch. What initially started as an effort to stop their oppression, he stops their oppression. They got what they wanted. They restored the temple. They killed all these people. They're doing all the bad stuff and whatever. And they got back in their way. But he's not done. He wants to drive everybody out. And he wants to create his own kingdom. That's what's going to develop. So here's the huge problem. Not only the war breaking out, but the Hasmoneans creating their own dynasty. So though the city of Jerusalem was retaken, the temple worship was restored, Judas Judas soon continued his fight against Greek influence. This time the goal was Jewish independence. Watch this. Jewish independence, not just the freedom to worship. Backtrack. Assyrians wouldn't let you do anything. They took people and scattered them everywhere. Babylonians said, you can worship whatever you want, but you got to stay in our country. The Persians said, you can go back and worship in your own country, but we're still going to run your country. That's still what's going on. That's not independence. That's not autonomy. That's not self-governing. Somebody else is still telling them what to do. So Judas said, we can do what we want worship-wise. Now we want these people out of here. This is part of a political zealot mindset that's going to exist even during the days of Jesus. This time the goal was Jewish independence, not just to worship Jehovah God, but notice, national, political, military Jewish independence. Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? Who said that? The apostles. Who do they ask? Jesus. What were they asking? This. They were asking, are you going to give us what Judas was trying to do? Are you going to do for us what the zealots were wanting to do? Are you going to make us a great nation and drive the Romans out of here? Will we be like... Remember, Messiah was a descendant of David. And if they thought the Messiah was anything like David, he was going to be a great king. And David, remember, Saul had killed his thousands, but David had killed his 10,000s. So if the Messiah, the one, the prophet, was going to be anything like David, he was going to whoop up on everybody, kick them all out. That's not what Jesus was about. All right? Let me just say, if you didn't know this, whoop up is not in the Bible. My point is, that's what they were looking for. A century and a half before, or closer than that, they had these people who drove people out. And they were looking for that again. And so, Jewish independence, not just freedom to worship undeterred by others, but we call the shots. You're gone, we are the leaders of our country. Alright, so in May of 160, Judas fought the Greek army, led by a man by the name of Bacchides, as he was defeated, and Judas died. You might think, well, that's it, that's the end of everything. Nope, remember, he was one of five brothers. And so, another brother is going to take his place. Jews didn't give up. First Maccabees says that Jonathan, brother to Judas, was going to take his place. Now watch. Alcimus, the guy who was anointed by the prior Seleucus to be a Hellenist priest, he is going to be deposed and Jonathan retakes Jerusalem. When I say retake Jerusalem, they're already worshiping in a better way than before, but he retakes it because you still got this guy who's a Greek sympathizer. That's the Hellenist. Jonathan says, we got to get rid of that guy. No longer use the place of worship. It has been 5 years since the rededication. There's still Greek influence in the temple because this guy, who's a sympathizer to the Greeks, he's still the high priest. Interestingly, Alexander Ballas, who claimed to be the next king, garners support for himself by watching this, declaring Jonathan to be the next high priest. Now here's what's interesting. The family of Mattathias, grandfather, Hasmonean's come to him, the son, Maccabean, same general family. The family that started a revolt against ungodly influence by outsiders are now in a position that one of the members of the family becomes the next priest. Now here's an interesting thing. You can show that Mattathias was a Levite, but you cannot show that he or his sons were in the priestly line. You might say, what's the difference? You can be all high priests were Levites, but not all Levites were high priests. Now, what's the point about that? All right. So I'm going to talk about this very quickly here. The revolt against the desecration of the temple system now found within it one of its members is the high priest in that system. We don't want you to abuse the temple system, and it ends up through all these years that one of these guys is now in line to be priest. Why? Because this guy's going to make it happen. Somebody who is outside of the country. Remember, they're looking for independence. But he is made priest by somebody else outside of the country who works in concert with him to make it happen. All right? So you still got political intrigue going on. All right. Very quickly, watch this. I'm going to go through it fast, and you'll have it in the material later when class is done tomorrow. Three sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. All three sons and their descendants were Levites because they were descendants of a guy named Levi. All right? Both of my boys and my daughter are apples. Her name's changed since she got married. She married a gentleman whose last name is Blanco, so now she's a white apple. All right, bad joke. All right, so as we move through the record from Exodus going forward, there are Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, all involved in specific duties, all right? If you read through the book of Numbers and the book of Leviticus and the latter part of the book of Exodus, all the different ones had different duties, all right? Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. But only... I touched something. Let's see if we'll bring it back.
You did.
I did, and I went all the way back to the beginning of the file. All right, I apologize for that. I touched the cord, and I disconnected myself, so let me bring that back. All right, so we're about to get in some really interesting stuff here. All right, so Jonathan... All right, here we are. So Jonathan is going to exert his influence. He's going to become a priest. So here's where we were. Fortunately, it's still highlighting. All right? So Aaron and his brother, they weren't just the sons of Levi. They were specific sons of one of Levi's sons, Gershon, Kohath, Merari. We're going to see that they're both sons of Kohath, the middle son. Exodus tells of Moses' birth. Exodus 2 does. Exodus 6 tells us Aaron and Moses were born to Amram. All right? When you go back in the generation, it says Amram was one of the sons of Levi through Kohath. All right? Gershon's sons are mentioned, verse 17. Kohath are in 6:18. Merari next. Amram, notice, is descended through Kohath, and that's where the Levitical priesthood, the high priest, came through Aaron. So it's Levi, Kohath, all right, Amram, Aaron, and then Aaron's four sons, Nadab and Abihu, two died, Ithamar, Eleazar. You can prove that Mattathias is a descendant of Levi, but you can't prove he's a descendant of Kohath. So there's no way to know whether or not he was even qualified to be the priest. My point is, even if he was, he became a high priest because of the influence of outside help, because of one of the Seleucids. Now, what's the point? For 115 years, this family ran the show. So they become their own kings, so to speak. You might say, well, they're not kings. Oh, yeah. One of them's going to assume the title of king. So now you've got a priest, a descendant of Mattathias, the Hasmoneans and the Maccabeans, all the same people, who are going to be in control spiritually, politically, and militarily for 115 years. You might think that's kind of a good thing because they're the ones who want to get rid of the Greek influence. Yes, but over the next 115 years, this family began to adopt as much Greek influence as they were opposed to initially, with the exception of causing pagan worship. Greek culture, Greek clothing, Greek ideas, they were all about that, all right? So that was okay because they were in control and they had many things right about what worship was supposed to be, but they didn't have everything right. So my point is, what started out as a family that was in opposition to Greek influence is going to succumb to that. Now, watch this. Mr. Jonathan, his duties weren't so restricted to the priesthood. He continued to fight battles. Here's a priest that goes off fighting war. What's that about? Because they were all about independence. Not just getting rid of you telling us how to worship, but get out of our country. That independence. Again, the whole thing that the apostles said, Lord, at this time you're going to restore the kingdom again to Israel. Jesus said, my kingdom's not of this world. You're not far from the kingdom of God. That did not mean you're about to join my army. That meant you understand some spiritual things. And so that's what's going on. So he's going to fight battles. And I just mentioned this, I mentioned it later, that I've been using the word Seleucid the whole time. That's named after the first general of Alexander, whose name was Seleucus Nicator. And so the Seleucids are just are successors of him. Not all descendants, but successors. Now, Jonathan's killed. He's the priest. But there's another brother, Simon. Remember, there's five. We've talked about Judas. We've talked about Simon. It's Jonathan, we've talked about Simon. The other two are not going to be mentioned. He's the last of the brothers. He continued to fight against Grecian. I put an extra E in there. Grecian, Seleucid influence. He, like Jonathan, served as high priest. So here's another guy that we cannot prove that he was of the high priestly lineage who's serving as a priest. So the influence of the Maccabees continues. At one point during Simon's time of service, a Seleucid contender, this is somebody who's not a Seleucid, but who's fighting against them, he's tired of the oppressive restrictions of the Jews and so forth. He grants a greater measure of independence, and we're going to see that it's going to be greater than anything going all the way back to the time when they were first taken captivity. And Simon was eventually able to remove all the Jewish Hellenists, that is, the people of Greek influence, from the city. Those are the ones who are living in the citadel, the fortress near the temple. So he gets rid of those people. That's a better thing. But they're still under the influence of the Greeks. What kept the people going? Oh, I'm sorry.
Lifted.
What did I do?
That top line on your screen. Now you moved it. Go down a little bit.
Okay.
Next to 129, 125. Is that lifted?
What are we looking? Show me what you're looking at, miss. Oh, thank you. All right, that's see, it's not, that's spelled correctly. It's just the wrong word.
It's a real word.
Spell checkers don't guess if it's a homonym.
That's right.
Good point. So anyway, he's going to do something that's even a little bit better. He gets rid of these Hellenists. They're in the vicinity of the temple itself. Now, what we mentioned before was the Hasmoneans. That's the continuation of the Maccabeans, Mattathias. Mattathias, Simon, the last one, dies in 135. For the next 70 years until 63, what's key about 63? That's when Roman general Pompey shows up. That's when the Herods start showing up in the next generation after that. That's when we're getting really close to the actual time of the New Testament. So we're not just going through a lot of history for 500 years. As we're going through 500 years, we're getting almost up to the start of the New Testament. And that's why we're studying this, because everything going on in this 400 to 500 year block, 500 years starting from the time of the release of captivity, 536, another 70 years to the time that the temple's destroyed. So that second temple period is 600 years. That period dominates what's going on in the New Testament. Some of it is actually in the New Testament. So next 70 years, the extends the rule of Maccabees, Hasmonean, same people, anything but smooth. Now watch. So they're getting rid of Gentile influence from the standpoint of their presence in and around the city of Jerusalem, but the rest of the culture is picking up anyway, all right? So what's interesting is they start making the geographic borders bigger. How are they doing that? They're defeating their enemies. How are they doing that? The guy who's the priest is fighting battles like he's a military commander. I said before, there's a vacuum. No kings who fights the battles. Well, nobody is fighting their battles because there weren't battles to fight. These guys are not only priests, they're now military leaders. And we're going to see one of them's going to be called a king. And so there are no prophets. They're going to do what they're going to do. All right? So they're driving out Gentiles. 8 years of rule, Simon goes to visit his family, and he's killed by his son-in-law. And one of his sons, now we're getting outside of the generation of the first Mattathias, and then his sons, now we're a generation removed, two generations later. So this man, John Hyrcanus, is one of the sons of Simon. He goes after the guy who killed his father, his son-in-law. So it's a brother-in-law. He didn't catch him. He gets away, and his mother and sisters are killed. And so now John Hyrcanus is going to be the next guy. He's not only a high priest. Notice he's a ruler. What's that mean? It means he's involved in political military control. Another Seleucid, I told you before, the guy that did all the damage before was number four. This is number seven. So they're just piling up the numbers. My doctrine, Dahlonega, is a third. He said, my daddy's a doctor. I said, yeah. And I said, and his daddy's a doctor. I said, and your son? He goes, he's a fourth. I said, is he a doctor? He says, no, he plays with Legos. So I get a kick out of people naming the same. You know, George Foreman named all those kids George. I get a kick out of that.
That's
so
like Frank Bowling.
Is that right?
Yeah,
he's
came up there.
Yeah?
He's a fourth.
He's a fourth, is he really? I can start calling him number four. Thanks for telling me that. he's going to rue the day that you told me that. But anyway, he lays siege to the city, and after Hyrcanus came to power, and he wanted the cities that Simon. Remember, Simon was conquering all kinds of lands. He said, you took some of our cities. I want them back. John Hyrcanus said, let's work a deal. He says, okay, you pay me. You can have the cities, but you pay me. All right, so Hyrcanus agreed to pay tribute. Why did he do that? Didn't want to go to war. Perhaps more importantly, it kept the Greek soldiers from coming into that. So Hyrcanus found 3,000 talents. This is the legend. I don't know that this has ever been documented. And David's tomb, and he paid him off. All right, so he's going to continue increasing the borders. Now watch this. This is incredible. This is going to take on an interesting dynamic in the next paragraph or two. As these priest/military leaders are expanding the borders, they are forcing Gentile converts to become Jews. What did they not like about the Greeks? They were forcing them to follow Greek religion. And now, if they were eradicating Greek religion, they're causing non-Jews to become Jews by means of force. They're doing the same thing that they didn't want done to them. All right? Now, interesting element. Watch this. During this time of territorial expansion and conversion of the Gentiles, some of the people on the other side of the Jordan, that's where Edom was, those are the descendants of Esau, also known as the Idumeans, they were conquered and converted, and Herod the Great is a descendant of some of the Edomite Idumean converts. So his family, a couple of generations back, were not Jews, but they were proselytized and no doubt forced to become Jews. So you see why Herod's in a unique situation. He's got a non-Jewish background from Esau, who was the brother of Jacob, and whose two nations have been at odds. But now he's the king of the Jews, appointed by the Roman Senate, and he has some Jewish connection because there's marriage relationships there, and his ancestors were forced to accept Judaism. So you might think, well, that's a complicated mess. That's exactly right. And it's not going to get any lesser than that going forward. So Mr. John Hyrcanus, all right, he's going to continue capturing lots of lands around him. He captures Shechem. That's where Jacob's well was. And it's assumed that he destroyed, watch this, a temple on the top of Mount Gerizim. Remember when the Jews are going to come in the land, Moses says, but Moses doesn't go into the land. He says, there's one mountain, there's another mountain. Mount of Blessing was Mount Gerizim. Mount of Cursing was Mount Ebal. As plain as these two mountains are the choices that God gives you to be obedient or disobedient. Which one are you going to choose? Well, the Samaritans built a temple on the top of Mount Gerizim. It was, after all, the Mount of Blessing. And so when Jesus is talking to the Samaritan woman at the well in John chapter 4, they were at Shechem. And it is of the opinion of many scholars, and sometimes their opinion is worth about a dime a dozen, but that the remnants of the destruction of the Samaritan temple was visible within plain sight of where Jesus and the Samaritan woman were. Still there. And what's the point? She said, our fathers, watch, she said, our fathers worshipped in this mountain. Which mountain? This one. Why did she say that? Because there was a temple there. They didn't just go up there and worship. They went up there and they built the temple. Remember, this is not the first time that people wanted to worship God, built temples other than one that God wanted. They did so in Asia Minor. They did so in Egypt. And these people did so. In fact, there are places in the southern part of Judah where there are remnants of miniature temples even to this day, where Jews attempted to duplicate the worship because they couldn't do it where they wanted to. Right? You might say, well, God never authorized that, but you can see the heart of the people. We want to worship God the way God wants us to, so we'll just build us our own temple. That's not what God wanted, but they're thinking in a right way from the standpoint of wanting to do what God wants. So, notice Mr. Hyrcanus was very successful militarily. Other issues going on. Watch this. A rebellion by the Pharisees. Who are these people? Never saw them before. These people come into existence during this period of time. And they're going to be very influential when Jesus comes on the scene. All right. Now, what's interesting is Mr. Hyrcanus used to side with them. The Hasidim that we talked about before are called the pious ones. The name Pharisee comes from separatist. They wanted to be separatists. What does that mean? We're not going to be part of all these people involved in Greek culture. We're going to separate ourselves from that. Remember, what was one of the doctrines of the Pharisees? You go into the marketplace before you do anything, you got to wash your hands. That's not just a cleanliness thing, that is washing the dirt of all the Gentiles off your hands. All right? Why do your disciples not follow the tradition of our elders like we do? That they don't wash hands before they have the meal. This is starting about the elders here and going back. This is the beginning of religious traditions in between the Testaments that are going to impact what Jesus is dealing with when he comes on the scene. So notice, Mr. Hyrcanus used to be a Pharisee. All right? Those are the much more religiously conservative people, the separatists. But then he became a Sadducee. Remember in the New Testament, what does it say about the Sadducees? They didn't believe in the resurrection, and they didn't believe in angels and other spirit beings, and they didn't believe in the authority of anything outside of the books of Moses, Genesis through Deuteronomy. So they doubted the inspiration of a large part of the religious text. So they were the liberals. So this guy was a religious, from the way we might view it, they doubted inspiration. He moved from being a religious conservative and a separatist, the Pharisee, to being on the side of the religious liberals. It may have been nothing more than a political move. Now what's interesting is, when Paul met before the Sanhedrin, it was a council made up of Pharisees and Sadducees.
But primarily Sadducees.
And when he realized that many of them were Sadducees and didn't believe in the resurrection, he stood up and says, I'm called for the judgment of my faith and my belief in the resurrection. Those guys started fighting. Why do you do that? Because you got two different groups whose roots go back to this period of time fighting against each other because they're not on the same page, generally speaking. So remember, all of these groups originated to solve a problem. What was the problem? Outside religious influence. The Sadducees were more susceptible to succumb and to side with outside religious influence, but this is part of what's going on. All right.
One of the things I've read about the Sadducees recently is that they were the more wealthy of the group.
And part of that is because they're usually associated and inclined to be a part of Hellenistic culture, which was, they were going along to get along and they were more involved in business than others. The separatists were not, in large measure, which is what they were. All right, so Mr. Hyrcanus dies. We've got a few more minutes. I want to go here, and then we'll stop. Mr. Hyrcanus is going to die, and he's the first one of the Maccabeans to die naturally. Everybody else was killed. All right? So in three generations, all the other guys were killed. So watch. This is very interesting. Mr. Hyrcanus has two sons. Aristobulus the first ruled for 1 year. What? Why? Well, we're about to talk about that. And notice he's the first one to assume the title of king. He's going to be a priest. He's going to be a military leader like the other ones were, if he's consistent with that. But he's going to be king. Others ruled like they were kings, but they didn't call themselves that. During his limited rule, he continued the expansion of Palestine's border. Notice coercing additional Gentile conversions to Judaism. So what they started against, you forcing your religion on us, now we're going to force our religion on you. All right? So there's more than a little bit of irony there. So there's another son of Hyrcanus. This son's name, Alexander Janius. Now watch this. Rules from 103 to 76. Now watch the date, 76. 13 years after that, the Romans are showing up. We're getting close to the Romans. What's so big about that? Romans are all over the New Testament. But their influence is going to come and be much bigger in the next few years. Josephus, the first century historian, records more information about this guy than anybody else, perhaps because it's closer and more resources available. He's going to continue terrible territorial expansion and so forth. At the end of his rule, the borders were nearly what they were in 1 Samuel chapter 3. The point is, the land's getting bigger. Remember, they want what happened and what existed in the time of David and Solomon. They want a king. They want a political leader. They want to dominate other nations around them. They want everybody to pay homage to them. And they want all their land back. All right? The land's still an issue even to this day, to say the least. So during one of the celebrations of the Feast of the Tabernacles, a riot breaks out. There are a lot of issues as to why that may have happened. And Janus' forces kill 6,000 rioters. So you think, wait a minute, he's a priest. That's right. How does that happen? Well, he's got a military. He's got an army. Janus continued to conquer surrounding lands like Moab and Gilead, that's on the other side of the river, until he was defeated but not killed by an Arabian king. Now what's interesting is his adversaries took courage because he was defeated but not killed. They said, oh, he's weak. We can fight against him. Watch. Some of his adversaries got another king. So remember, they can't do something by themselves. We're going to get somebody else to help us. So where do they go? They go to a leader from another country. So Demetrius comes to help him. He came hoping that he's going to be able to gain territories that he had lost. Doesn't work. Janus' adversaries, even with Demetrius' help, weren't able to overcome. Successful in overcoming Janus. So he withdrew. And Janus chased and captured some 100, 800 of his opponents. Now watch this. This is the guy who's a priest. In a ruthless display at his victory feast, that should be, that's got all the right letters. Yes, not in the right order. He executed his enemies in front of their families, and he crucified others. He's going to make an example. You're going to fight against me, I'm going to kill you. And I'm going to make this a lesson to everybody around you. I'm going to kill you in front of your family, and then I'm going to kill them. 8,000 people fled because this guy who's supposed to be a priest is just being ruthless. Now, I want you to notice this. Their pursuit of greed, position, and ruthlessness defined some of these guys who initially were rebelling against that very same thing on the part of the Seleucids. All right? So, he died at 76. Notice that. 76, that's 13 years away from the Roman influence. Like his predecessors, he expanded the borders, coming close to reaching as far as did Solomon. Now watch this. This is interesting. He succeeded by his wife. Now, what's interesting, I have to look into this more. Did she try to presume to be a priest? That doesn't fit. She's at least going to be a leader. During this time, this is interesting, the influence of the Pharisees grew, even to the point where they had the power to eradicate, which meant kill, exterminate their enemies. So the Pharisees, who grew out of a desire to be separatist religiously, are now just as politically, militarily involved as were others, right? Not a good thing. Salome dies. She's 73 years old, 67 BC. That's 4 years before the Romans show up. Two sons, Hyrcanus II, named after one of their daddies, Aristobulus II, named after another Aristobulus that we just mentioned. They're going to fight with each other. Hyrcanus II followed his mother's ruler, but that didn't continue beyond the first year. Why? Because his brother took the throne. Notice the throne. He's a priest. What do you mean a throne? Because they're kings and priests. That's going back a couple of generations already. All right? So he takes the throne. He rules for the next 4 years. Not to be outdone, watch this. His brother hid in the temple and held his brother's wife and children hostage. You better watch what you do. I got your wife and kids. You might think, this is nasty stuff. That's right. So he finally flees to Petra. He's protected by another king, Aretas, and Arabian. And so Hyrcanus's, watch this now, Hyrcanus's advisor, here's a guy he went to advise, his name is Antipater. He was the father of Herod the Great. You might think, wait a minute, this is way too convenient. All these people, those are New Testament characters. That's my point. Herod the Great, where's his influence come from? It comes from what's going on before the New Testament shows up.
It's no big deal to kill the babies.
Yeah, that's it. Before John comes on the scene, before Jesus comes on the scene, because of Roman influence, going to see in about 4 years, Mr. Herod the Great is involved by means of his ancestors in all the chicanery that's going on in the priesthood. So watch this. If the ancestors could be involved in establishing priests and deposing priests and moving priests around, maybe I can do it too. Just remember, two guys wear the name of high priest during Jesus' ministry. Where does that stuff come from? Comes from what's going on before Jesus shows up on the scene. Not saying like Jesus didn't know about it. My point is, what goes on in the New Testament didn't just start there. Pharisees didn't spring out of the rocks one day. Sadducees didn't spring out of the rocks one day. All the political, you know, subterfuge and intrigue didn't just start with Herod. Didn't start with Pilate. This stuff has been going on for centuries in the land of Israel. And this is what the Jews were used to. So you can see why people are suspicious of anybody who attracts attention. And did Jesus attract attention? Herod knew about it. Pilate knew about it. The religious leaders knew about it. The religious leaders trailed Jesus everywhere, putting him on the spot. What were they afraid of? We're afraid of more insurrection and more problems. We've got some degree of stability now. We don't need any more problems. So this stuff didn't just pop up in the new. Here's what's so incredible about this period of time. When you see this, you say, man, every time I see these guys in the New Testament from now on, I'm thinking, there's a history here. That's it. There's a history here. And the history is long-standing. So, notice, Antipater, father of Herod, tells Hyrcanus, listen, you will never become the king and the high priest if you stay here. So he tells him to go back. He gets another king to help him. So notice, all these guys are enlisting the aid, militarily, politically, of other kings in the area. Why could they do that? Because there's many kings all around them. It's not like U.S. that's only got two nations on its border. There are kings of other nations all around them. So, before an end to their fighting, that's Aristobulus and Hyrcanus II. Before it was reached, the two brothers, watch this. This is interesting. They bring another guy in, and these two guys send a message to Rome, said, would you come and solve this problem? Biggest mistake ever. Because Rome's going to come. And Rome is not going to leave Palestine for hundreds of years. So here's an interesting thing. Descendants of the guys who drove out the oppressors who said you can't do this or you have to do this religiously, generations later, they invite Rome to come in and help solve a problem. Only they invited more problems than it solved. You might say, what's Rome doing there? Rome was a growing empire. Remember, Antiochus IV, when he went down to fight against Ptolemy, one of the emissaries sent from the Roman Senate said, you don't fight against Egypt. I'm here from Rome to tell you that the Senate of Rome says, go back home. And he left. And that's when all hell broke loose, so to speak, in Jerusalem. That's when he caused all the destruction. That's when he caused all the desecration, all the stuff that he did. That starts then. Why? Because Rome was behind it. And he knew what Rome's power was. Rome didn't go away. All right? Rome's still around. So now we're down within a couple of years of Rome coming in, and these two brothers send for Roman aid. So, the country's been growing in its influence. Pompey, who's a Roman general, sent one of his lieutenants, all right? And he sends him, you go down there and stop that stuff, all right? So he sends a guy, I just realized, I think I misspelled, this guy's name is Scaurus, not Scars, all right? Got Aretas to pull back, and Aristobulus, who took the throne from his brother, he thought he won, all right? So Pompey comes down himself. And he's going to listen to what the brother's saying. He's going to make a decision. But before he makes a decision, Aristobulus says, I don't care what this guy's going. I'm going to go back and I'm going to be head of everything in Jerusalem. Well, that caught Pompey's attention. He said, that's it. I'm not making a decision in your behalf. I'm going to make a decision after for your brother. So Pompey goes after the brother who went off. He realizing it was foolish to resist him, he met him to negotiate. Pompey threw his weight behind Hyrcanus, the other brother, and Aristobulus and his advocates hid in the temple. After a three-month-long siege, the Romans, watch this, entered the temple. No business Romans going in the temple. Nobody's supposed to go in there. But this is how violated stuff was going on. Entered the temple and Hyrcanus' men followed, killing Aristobulus' men. This is one brother's army fighting against another brother's army, killing each other. All right? Aristobulus' sons were taken to prison. Notice where they went. They're taken to Rome. Why? Rome says, we are not going to let this stuff go on in this country. We'll solve it. We're taking you out of here. So they took him to Rome. Hyrcanus became the high priest, but he wasn't king. Watch this. One of the descendants of Mattathias assumed the role of king. Things didn't go too well because there was lots of dissension, lots of disputes. And so he said, you can be the priest, but you're not going to be the king. So once again, the independence they had lost. And another nation's going to tell them what to do. You can do all the priest stuff you want to do, but you don't tell us how to run the country. Who's going to do that? Rome, 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 Rome. This is where Rome enters the picture. You asked for our help to settle the dispute. We've come and brought our help. We've chased your brother off, taken him into captivity in Rome. He's going to be there. And you can go on, you can be priest, but this king stuff, no way. We're in charge. All right? Not to be king. So this ended the revolt that got rid of one set of oppressors, and it was resolved or ended by bringing in another oppressor, Rome. That's not what they anticipated. They didn't say, Pompey, come and rule us. They said, come and solve this dispute. All right? But that's not what happened. So their rule was established by fighting. This is what they were like. Established by fighting, eventually defeating those promoting Hellenization. But when they gained control, they became just that much more Hellenized themselves. So they became like what they fought against. Only they didn't desecrate the temple, and they weren't promoting worship of Greek gods. But the rest of the culture, they were okay. So they became just like the leaders of the Gentile nations, guilty of, watch this, greed, ambition, and ruthlessness. That's not a very good description of God's people. That's what they're supposed to be. So the Hellenization process was slow, picked up. I won't read all this in detail, but notice some of these things. The last guy, Jannaeus, made Greek Hellenization go very, very quick. He was a king and a priest, all right? He had sumptuous feasts with his concubines, the high priest. He was followed by his wife. That's Grecian formula. I was so tempted to say something about hair color there, but I decided not to.
Yeah, that's good.
But they followed that tradition. Mintage during this time was used in both Greek and Hebrew inscriptions, you know, giving credit to Greek culture. Use of military force, that's what kings like Saul and David Solomon did, but that's what these priests were doing. So not everybody's happy about that. So he opens the door with others to fill a void. And this is where all these people we'll talk about later as we have time, the pious ones, the separated ones, and the religious liberals, they all developed during this period of time. The Essenes were so tired of it, they went off and lived by themselves because they said, we don't want anything to do with the rest of you people. So they lived in the caves of Qumran, all right? And the Dead Sea Scrolls owe their origin to these people. So all of this stuff starts because nobody wants to deal with all the mess that's going on publicly. We're leaving here. We don't want anything to do with that. We're going to start our own religious group. We'll make everything right. Well, in the context of trying to make everything right, they made a lot of things wrong. And they themselves assumed too much authority. So that's what's happening. Now, the next lesson that we'll start with a little bit is the Romans are coming and the Herod rules. Now, we've got a lot of stuff that we want to do. If we'll go all the way back to beginning, we've got just a few minutes before we start. And let me see. I want to get to the end of here. All right. So we've gone through this much. I keep bringing up this stuff. This is what we've gone through. We've gone through all of this period. That's all history. Now, the Romans are coming. We'll deal with a little bit of that in Herod rule. So we'll try to do that in the first thing in the morning. But the last thing, this is part of the course description. I want us to deal with some of the literature that developed during this period. There were no inspired prophets, but that didn't stop people from writing. And some of the literature that these people wrote, they treated as if it were scripture. So the traditions of some of these groups, the traditions of the priests, the Levites, and the scribes, and the traditions of the Essenes and the Zealots, and the religious system of the Samaritans, all develops and kicks into high gear during this period of time. And this is part of what defined what Jesus was facing. So the period between the testaments isn't just some, you know, great chasm of emptiness and has no impact on what's coming before. It was influenced by the redo before that didn't stick and didn't stick long enough and is as thoroughly enough. And that's part of what defined what the Jews were when they came on the scene. So imagine that you don't know anything about Jewish history. And you come on the scene roughly the time Jesus is born. And you walk into the city of Jerusalem and people saying, you know, what do you know about Jerusalem? Well, tell us, who are you people? Well, what put you on the map? What are you about? Who's this guy that's Herod? What's he about? What's the history of this people? What's good about this country? What's bad about this country? Where have you been? What road have you traveled? This is part of the road that they've traveled. This is part of what forms the world in which Jesus lived. Taught, performed miracles, healed people. It's against this backdrop of the history of his people. Some of it isn't too pretty. And so he's here to provide light so that through him, people might come to have eternal life against that kind of history. So he's got his task cut out before him. And so that's part of the importance as to why we want to study this even more. All right. We are a little bit past where we wanted to stop, but we went long in each session. Started a little bit late, but that's okay. Any last minute questions? All right. Tomorrow morning, we're going to be here at 9. Go 9 to 12. Break for lunch. Start up at 1. Be done by 4. We're only halfway through. We got 6 more sessions tomorrow. So there's a lot more to cover, and we'll see how far we get, all right? Thanks for staying awake. I told Lyle to bring toothpicks to keep our eyes open tomorrow. All right, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
Lost sheep of Israel.
That's it.
It's amazing how...